And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky back with you. Buck, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm good, DJ. It's our favorite time of year. We are now getting close to the draft, which means it is mock draft season. And as much as you and I love putting together mock drafts and going through the scenarios, I just think it's important that people understand that with some of these mock drafts, we're taking different strategies, and you can't necessarily take this for how we may view a player. There's a lot of if-then scenarios that we'll go through. And so we'll see. 1.0 DJ's version, see what it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, look, 32 for 32. Let's go. I got them all right here. I'm confident. I've got my top 50, I believe, comes out next week. So that'll be how I stack these players. A lot of how I do the mock draft, I always tell you I use my ears more with that, use my eyes with my top 50. But this is a unique draft. It's a little bit different. I think there's a lot of players with grades that would kind of carry them between like the 12 to 25 range in a normal draft. I don't think the top of this draft is as strong as maybe we've seen in some other years, but there's a lot of quality and there's a lot of depth. But what I'm getting at is there's going to be a varying opinions on these players across the league. So it's not a clear cut top 10, like maybe we've seen in some years past, Buck.
Yeah, no, I think more volatility in this draft more than any other draft. And I think it's important for everyone to understand draft boards are like snowflakes. There are no two that are exactly alike. And depending upon your team and how your team wants to play, system, scheme, and those things, guys are going to be ranked differently. But now, even more, we have the changing of coaches and general managers that are going on right now. And so who knows what this looks like and what it will look like as we get closer to the draft. But there will be more variances in this draft more than any other draft that we've seen in recent years.
Yeah, some takeaways before we get started here. One, when you go through this process and you look at all the teams, you look at the pool of players, you look at the needs. One thing that I came away with, man, it's a good tackle draft, and there are a ton of teams in the need of tackles. A lot of these teams with young quarterbacks trying to upgrade their offensive line. So we're going to see tackles fly off the board, and there's going to be a lot of them in the first round. Second takeaway is wide receivers, it's a flavor group. There's all different styles, flavors, whatever you want, you can find. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder. That's why I think you can see, man, you're going to see wildly different rankings of these receivers across the 32 draft rooms. So those are some of the takeaways that I took away kind of going through this process. But let's not wait any longer here, Buck. Let's jump right in. The first pick, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Everyone has been going with Aiden Hutchinson. I've seen some Thibodeaux out there. Man, I look at what they did last year, Trevor Lawrence, and the struggles that he had. I just feel like this pick has to help him. And I think of the general manager in Trent Baalke, who is a Bill Parcells guy. They are very close. He's tried to hire Parcells a couple times, but they go way back. And I think about Bill Parcells having the first pick, and I think about Jake Long being the first pick.
Ooh.
And that's why I've arrived at this. I have the Jags with the first pick passing on the pass rushers and taking Evan Neal from Alabama, who is enormous. That something that Bill Parcells has always believed in, collecting the big guys. And then you've got somebody that's done it at a really high level. He's gotten better every year at Alabama. He's not perfect, but this is a big, giant human being that's going to come in and help your quarterback who desperately needs it.
Yeah, no, I think you're on the right wavelength when it comes to the quarterback. I think everyone is going to look at the young quarterbacks, and Joe Burrow is going to be probably the example that many use. Hey, man, the Cincinnati Bengals were able to get to the playoffs in 2 years. They got the quarterback. The next year, they put the weapons around him. And even though we're looking at that offensive line, and we can say, like, can they, should they? I think the theme is you have to build around the quarterback. Evan Neal is certainly a nice pass protector, someone who is a big body who can move bodies at the line of scrimmage. Regardless of how the Jaguars play, at some point, you need to upgrade the fortress around Trevor Lawrence. So to me, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, Cam Robinson walks in free agency. Walker Little, who you took last year, he's over at right tackle. Now you've got two monsters at the two tackles, two young guys within their first 2 years that can grow with your young quarterback, Buck.
Look, man, having been with the franchise since the inception, I remember when they had Leon Searcy and Tony Baselli, and that led to a lot of success. So I will never knock the ability to have two frontline tackles to protect what you think is a marquee quarterback.
All right, so that kind of leads the dominoes to start here. We get to the Lions with the number 2 pick, it's too easy. It's right in front of them. It's Aiden Hutchinson. You just send a taxi to go pick him up, or I guess you send an Uber to pick him up and drive him over to the facility. That seems like a no-brainer for them. Just a rock-solid, safe player. He's going to test like a freak, I think, to me. He's plug and play and give some juice to this defense here for the Lions.
Yeah, more importantly, I think he fits the culture that Dan Campbell is building in Detroit. Hard, high motor players, guys that are very disciplined and detailed in their approaches. Aiden Hutchinson fits that. Look, he's not the perfect prospect, but man, there's a lot to like about him. This is a super freakish athlete, a guy who does it the right way. I think when you're in Detroit, you're trying to accumulate as many of those guys, and then you figure out what to do with them. So now another pick that I'm all aboard with Aiden Hutchinson going at 2.
All right, we get to number 3 with the Texans. All right, try and get inside Nick Cesario's head here and think back to his roots, obviously, you know, decades with the New England Patriots. And we think about how the Patriots have built those defenses, not like the rest of the league who builds front to back. The Patriots build back to front. And so who's a Patriot-type player? I went with Kyle Hamilton, the safety from Notre Dame, who is as clean as it gets. You talk about somebody who's big, fast, he's versatile, he's smart. I mean, it just, to me, felt like a Patriots-type player. They bypass the pass rushers. They go get Kyle Hamilton, who can do a lot of different things for your scheme. I think that's something that they would really value in that kind of Patriots South that they have there in Houston.
Hey, we've talked about this multiple times on the podcast. Elite defenses are built right down the middle with blue-chip players. And the way the game is going, you need to have someone in the middle of the field who can impact the game in a variety of different ways. Can come down in the box and make tackles? Can they cover a little bit? Do they have the range to play over the top? Well, Kyle Hamilton can do all of those things. And so when you think about a high IQ team and a high IQ defense that Nick Cesario wants to put together, man, it starts with a guy like Kyle Hamilton being able to be the director, the orchestra conductor in the back end.
So now you get to number 4 with the Jets. And this is an interesting one because you've got Kayvon Thibodeau, who is still on the board from Oregon. But you also have, in my opinion, the best offensive lineman in the draft. Now, I ended up putting Evan Neal in a mock draft first overall. But Icky, to me, Ikem Ekwonu is the best offensive lineman in the draft, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And you've got a situation where, man, you're trying to really help your young quarterback and Zach Wilson. I could make a strong argument to take the offensive lineman here. But you look at the pass rush and how anemic it was. They get Carl Lawson back. But Kayvon Thibodeau being there, some people may be surprised he's here at 4. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes beyond this and dropped even further just because the tape wasn't great this year. To me, you saw some effort issues. I think he's got some stiffness that shows up when you look at his lower body. I think that concern is a little bit of a concern to me. So I think that we've kind of just penciled Thibodeau into the top 2. I don't necessarily think that's a lock, but I do have him going right here. The Jets have that decision to make. I have him taking Thibodeau here with the 4th pick.
Yeah, this is interesting. It's interesting because there's been a lot of conversation about Thibodeau. A lot of people just kind of assumed he is number 1 or number 2, but here he is for the Jets available at number 4. If you're Joe Douglas, what you're thinking is, how can I win the division? Because before we can even think about being a Super Bowl team, how can we win the division? Well, in this division, you now have a quarterback in Josh Allen who looks like a marquee player. You also have maybe an emerging player in Mac Jones that you have to defend. And so the only way that you're going to be able to get past those teams, if you have to be able to affect their quarterback, and the easiest way to do it is to have a good pass rusher. That is why the pick would be sensible for the Jets at 4 right now.
Yeah, so they go Thibodeau. By the way, he was working through a little bit of an ankle injury early in the season. One of those things, as we kind of go through the process, I'm excited to kind of learn more about that and see if that factored into some of the issues that I saw on the tape. All right, we get to the Giants here at number 5. I think they're all in on Daniel Jones. I think they're committed to him. I think they want to see if they can put some more pieces around him to make it work, whoever that the new regime is, when they're trying to work through that as we speak. But I've got them taking Icky here. Great nickname, by the way, Icky. Ikem Ekwonu from NC State, one of my favorite players in the draft. Just nasty. You could play him at tackle if you wanted to. You kick him inside to guard. I think he'd be outstanding in there as well. But somebody's played a lot of football and has some impressive tape. You talk about just finishing dudes. I love the way he plays, and give Daniel Jones a little help here with the 5th pick.
Daniel Jones needs a lot of help. They have to fix this offensive line. Despite their best intentions and their efforts, they haven't been able to do that. And when the New York Giants are playing the kind of style of football they want to play, regardless of who the coach has been, they've always been really good up front. Hey, Icky gives them an opportunity to solidify a big position to set Daniel Jones up for success in what could be the make or break year for him during his tenure with the Giants. So yeah, this is a sensible pick, is one that is long overdue. They have to upgrade that offensive line.
No doubt. All right, we get to the Carolina Panthers. Interesting. I think this is where you start to see the quarterback discussion take place. Are they high enough on any of these guys? Now, they don't have a second round pick. They traded that, the Sam Darnold trade. They've already picked up the fifth year option for Sam Darnold. I don't know. I think they'll do their homework on these quarterbacks, Buck, but I feel like with them already financially committed to Sam Darnold, I could see them trying to get one more year out of him. Maybe they look at a quarterback a little bit later on. Maybe they try and address that in free agency. I just don't see him doing it here with the sixth pick. And I have them doing what they did last year, which in my opinion is go out and get one of the premier corners. And it's probably not the guy that everybody thinks. To me, I think the best corner in this draft is Ahmad Sauce Gardner from Cincinnati. He's got outstanding tape. He's 6'2". He's long. He's rangy. He's very fluid and loose. And can you imagine now if you're Matt Rhule? I know you've got to get the offense humming, but when you can line up on defense, get J.C. Horn back healthy, last year's first-round pick, put him on one side, Sauce Gardner on the other, you can lock people down on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, so DJ, we've talked about this. The key to becoming a team that goes from being bad to good is you have to find a way to be dominant on one side of the ball. And so we think about the draft picks and what the Panthers have been able to do in the past. They were able to get the defense to play at a high level for parts of the season by really being a defensive-oriented team. Well, now go all the way in on that. So now you have Sauce Gardner to go with J.C. Horn. You can lock people down on the outside. You encourage your defensive coordinator to really bring the heat and come from everywhere. And maybe, just maybe, you get to be a 500 team or maybe a little bit above 500 by playing great defense. So we've seen the Panthers kind of go that defensive route. Maybe Matt Rhule says, hey, I got to get something going. And the easiest thing in my estimation to get going would be that defense.
Yeah, you think about who you're chasing that division with the Bucs, Tom Brady and that passing attack. Now you can match up a little bit on the outside with two big, really big, rangy, athletic corners. Okay, here we go. We're going to go to the Giants with the next pick. We had them taking Ekwonu, the tackle, at the fifth pick. They come back with the seventh pick. They go Devin Lloyd, linebacker from Utah, who, to me, it's a great discussion between him and N'Kobe Dean. I think Lloyd ends up going ahead of him. He's just taller. He's longer. He's probably going to be a little bit faster as well. Both outstanding players. Both are incredible in the intangibles, guys you want in the middle of your defense in terms of the leadership, the intelligence, off the charts. So I know off the ball linebackers, it's a touchy subject with some people. They don't, you know, philosophically believe in taking those guys in the top 10. But in this draft where there's just not as many clean players, I think Devin Lloyd is one of the cleaner players. So I've got him going to the Giants here. And you talk about building, you know, up the middle on offense and on defense. They get that accomplished here with their two top 10 picks.
Yeah, depending upon who the coach comes in, this is certainly in play. Devin Lloyd is terrific. We talk about dominance in the middle of the field, being able to dominate in between the tackles. Devin Lloyd is a dominant player. All you had to do is just pop in the tape. The guy's all over the place making plays. I like him. And you're right, the discussion, N'Kobe Dean and some of these other guys that can play that off the linebacker spot. It'll be interesting as we go along, but man, I can't knock Lloyd from being a top 10 pick. He's terrific. He dominated the Pac-12.
No doubt. All right, let's keep it rolling here. Let's go to the Falcons. Eighth pick. Now, a lot of different directions that they could go here. You know, Matt Ryan getting older, maybe they entertain the quarterback opportunity here. I don't think that happens. For everything I've been told, Arthur Smith is very happy with Matt Ryan and still feels like he's got more. So I look at the situation with Calvin Ridley and that being unsettled as at the time we're recording this, and I look at the receiver position. I look at Arthur Smith and where he came from with Tennessee, mm-hmm. and I think about A.J. Brown. Well, who's the A.J. Brown in this draft? It's Treylon Burks. The receiver from Arkansas, a little bit taller, 6'3", 225 pounds. He can roll, Buck. I mean, he's got so many long touchdowns, you know, 80, 90 yards. He tore up Alabama and you know, one of the better games that they're going to play. He's a really good player after the catch. He's tough. He's physical. I think he's got something like 11-inch hands, and he can roll. So to me, I think that would be a fun piece. You have Kyle Pitts. Now all of a sudden you put him out there. And you got Treylon Burks and Pitts. That's fun to work with.
Yeah, it's fun to work with. And you always have to tap into the head coach's background to kind of get an understanding of their sweet tooth. Arthur Smith had a lot of success in Tennessee with A.J. Brown. DJ, when you look at Treylon Burks, his game is eerily similar to the way that A.J. Brown played at Ole Miss. You watch him, man. He wins the 50-50 ball. He dominates with his physicality and toughness. He has great run after catch ability. Wouldn't say he's the cleanest route runner, but in this game, we've seen that people have been able to really unleash those guys because Arthur Smith's background with A.J. Brown, these dots connect. Interesting.
Yeah, and again, I have all these top receivers, these top six guys. There's not much separating them grade-wise. It just comes down to what you're looking for. That's why we kind of tap into what these coaches have been around to see what they might prefer. All right, here we go. Ninth pick overall, the Denver Broncos, and here we go. This is the quarterback. I've got Kenny Pickett going here. You can argue, okay, is Kenny Pickett a top 10 talent? Okay, I might not have him as one of my 10 top players in this draft class, but when you look at the Broncos, if they can't get something done in free agency and you're sitting there with a ninth pick, and in my opinion, Kenny Pickett is better than anything you have on campus. So we've got a chance to upgrade that position. Kenny Pickett's played a lot of football. He's a little bit older. Doesn't bother me at all. Same thing was said about Joe Burrow coming into the league, a little bit older. I think this kid's really, really established himself as a solid player who's a little more sudden and a little more of a playmaker. We saw that this year than we'd seen previously at Pitt. He's very accurate. So to me, he upgrades what they've got. So that's why I've got him going quarterback.
Yeah, I think this is interesting because Kenny Pickett very well could benefit from the bounce of what I call the Joe Burrow, Mac Jones bounce.
Yeah.
The Joe Burrow bounce because his production came very late in his career, and Joe Burrow has kind of dismacked or debunked that, where we're like, is he 1 year wonder, those things. So he benefits from that. I think he also benefits from the Mac Jones bounce in terms of, look, Kenny Pickett has more athleticism than Mac Jones, but I think from a cerebral IQ, the way that he plays it, people are going to try and link that up because Mac Jones has success this year starting for the Patriots. It'd be interesting to see what the consensus eventually is on Kenny Pickett, but I can see a path for him to go in the top 10 because he is a very effective player. He played really well and did a lot of good things his final season at Pitt.
Yeah, think about that term point guard, right? You know, just being able to distribute the ball. They've got the pieces, man. Denver has got all the pieces in place. They just need somebody that can be that point guard, distribute the football accurately. I think Kenny Pickett actually have a chance to be successful there. Get ready for hand size season, by the way. That's going to be his topic of conversation. We get to the Senior Bowl. That's where it'll start. It's not have big hands. Doesn't really bother either one of us, I believe, Buck. But something to be ready for because it's coming. Okay, here we go. Let's go 10th pick. Final pick in the top 10. The Jets have gone pass rusher early. I mentioned that decision being between pass rusher and offensive lineman. You know, I think they'd, you know, really, really would like to come out of this with an offensive lineman when you look at some of the needs that they possess. But you also, you need a corner. So I've got him going corner here, and maybe a name that you don't expect. Mm-hmm. But I love this kid's tape. I think it's outstanding. And that's Trent McDuffie from Washington. Does not get challenged a lot when you watch the tape. But he is very fluid. He is fast. He will fill against a run. I love his toughness that he brings. And when he does get opportunities, he can find and play the ball. He just doesn't get challenged all that often. But he is a good football player who I think would go to the Jets and immediately be their top corner. So they've gone pass rusher and corner here with their top two picks.
Yeah, Trent McDuffie, long legacy, big-time playmakers coming out of UW. One thing that I will say, Jimmy Lake at the time did a really good job of developing those guys in the back end. Didn't necessarily work for him when he was a head coach, but, man, just look at all the players that have come out of UW recently. I think the big conversation that everyone will have when they see Trent McDuffie go 10, what is up with Derek Stingley? Because Derek Stingley from LSU has been roundly expected to be one of those guys that comes off the board in the top 10. So for him to be out, that is a bit of a controversy.
Yeah, no doubt. We're going to get to that, by the way, just a second here. Last thought on McDuffie. I got a little bit of a Jair Alexander vibe when I watched him, and we know how well he's played at the next level. But you posed the question, where the heck is Derek Stingley Jr.? He's coming up. We'll get to him right after this. All right, Buck, we'll pick up the pace here as we go through the rest of this. We get to the 11th pick, the Washington football team. I think they're probably more likely to fill the quarterback position in free agency, but in this exercise, it hasn't happened yet. So I'm going to give them Matt Corral, a quarterback from Ole Miss here with the 11th pick.
Hey, I like it. I think I think there's a lot of stuff about him that would make him number one when people really dig into it. And so I think that conversation and comparison between Matt Corral, and Kenny Pickett is going to be fascinating. But for the Washington football team, he'd be a nice pick because I do believe talent-wise, he's an upgrade over what they have, as you say, on campus.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, here you go. Here he is, Derek Stingley. I have him going 12 to the Minnesota Vikings. I know some people expect he could go all the way as high as number 4 to the Jets. You see his name mentioned up there. He is very talented. He's big. He's a very fluid athlete. The tape just wasn't very good the last couple years to me. He struggled with really with kind of the physicality bothered me. Some of the want to in terms of tackling really bothered me. And so that to me is why I think you could see him slide a little bit. I don't think that every team is as in love with him as maybe it's made out to be. So the ability's there and somebody can draft him and get it out of him. You know, it could be a home run pick, but there's some concern there with what he's put on tape the last couple of years after a phenomenal freshman year.
This conversation will come down to talent, toughness, and technique.
Yeah.
What do you favor? What do you believe in? What do you value more? He is very talented, but you do have questions about the toughness because if you can't tackle, that is a problem. And we're seeing in these playoffs where it's about running the football and being able to get guys down on the perimeter. You can't hide people. And so the tackling is a very real concern. It's going to be one of those things that he's going to have to address. And you put up 2 years of suspect tape, it's hard to wipe that away. He is very talented, but the tape is the tape. And it's hard to ignore how he's looked the last couple seasons.
Yeah, so that's why I've got him dropping a little bit there to number 12. We get to number 13. I've got the Browns taking Trevon Walker out of Georgia, who is kind of a freak. You know, it's interesting. You look at him, I think he had 6 sacks, but he really didn't get to rush all that much. They kind of play him tight. They play him in like a 4-eye inside the tackle a good bit. So he's having to kind of play run to pass, and then they rotate guys through. 275-pound guy, you can see, I want to say it's the Florida game. You can see him drop in coverage, lay out, get his hand on a ball, tip it up in the air, and it's picked. Like, this big dude plays off the ball. It's crazy the things he can do. I think he's going to be a better pro than necessarily what we saw at Georgia, but I have him going there to the Browns. Jadeveon Clowney probably going to walk out the door. He steps right in and starts.
Yeah, this is a good one because size, athleticism, playmaking ability, you don't get to see him unleash it all the time. But, man, that Georgia defense was so loaded. You can just feel it, man. They just feel like an NFL defense. He certainly played his role. We'll see. The Browns have to continue to keep adding pieces to the defense because it was really good, but you want great, and you have to find someone opposite Myles Garrett who also can be very productive.
Well, this ain't the last of the Georgia guys in my mock draft here. Well, there's plenty more to come here. Ravens with the 14th pick. I've got him taking Trevor Penning, who's a really, really intriguing offensive lineman. He's huge. He's like 6'7", 320 pounds. I think he's got 35-inch arms, just really long. He is nasty. He kind of fits what they like in terms of temperament. But you get Ronnie Stanley back healthy. You park Ronnie back at left tackle, who they've paid. Now you take Penning. You plug him in at right tackle. Hopefully you do a better job keeping guys healthy, and the Ravens get right back to where they want to be.
Yeah, this is one where we talked about it. Like, some of the Ravens' issues really stem from their inability to control the line of scrimmage. Injuries tore them up. But when you have Ronnie Stanley back, you're able to kind of fill that hole on the right side because Villanueva was, man, he was tough to watch at times. So now you give them a guy who is long, he's rangy, he has the nastiness that's a part of the culture. He is a fit in Baltimore.
All right, we get to the Eagles here. They've got 3 picks coming up here in the next 5 picks here. Pick 15, I've got him going George Karloftis from Purdue. Very skilled rusher. He's got power, big time power, leverage rusher. You know, when you watch him, he does not look long. He does not look like he has much length. I'm curious to see when those measurements come in. I haven't seen those yet. So that'll be intriguing. You know, he's got juice. He's got some burst. Not necessarily the most nimble in terms of bending at the top of his rush. Mm-hmm. I think there'll be some conflicting grades on him, but he's a finisher. And that's something we always talk about on the podcast, guys that finish, get guys on the ground, just has a real natural feel.
Yeah, he does have natural feel. He's also coming from a school that has done a really good job of producing pass rushers. You think about Akin Adell, you think about Sean Phillips, Ryan Kerrigan. The list goes on and on and on. Rosie Colvin. They have some guys that have come through there. He is a talented player. He's a guy who has some pop to him. Heavy-handed. Maybe he's the next one to start at the next level.
There we go. All right. 16, just for you, Buck. I've got the Eagles taking Drake London, the wide receiver from USC, because we've talked about that. Getting a bigger wide receiver kind of complement Devontae Smith. They got an up-close look at Mike Evans and how difficult he is to cover. I think Drake London's going to elicit some comps to Mike Evans. To me, reminds me more a little bit of Mike Williams, who I see doing the Charger games. But give them a little different flavor in their wide receiver group. Big, rangy, tough. Man, I love his game, and I think it would be a quarterback's best friend. So you go defensive line, you come back with a big wide receiver. I believe that's 3 years in a row they've gone wide receiver, so you're going to hear the Matt Millen comps, what he did with the Detroit Lions back in the day. But I do feel like they've got to get a little more on offense. I think Drake London and give them something they don't have.
Yeah, this is the luxury of being able to have three first-round picks. You can go and address that position. I don't care what you say. When you miss, you want to look, fail fast, and make up for it. So go and get a big body in Drake London, someone who can take it off the rim. You need to expand the strike zone. Howie Roseman has come out and talked about Jalen Hurts having the opportunity to be the starter in 2020. Well, you want to give him an opportunity to have success. Big body playmaker to complement Devontae Smith on the other side and Dallas Goedert over the middle.
All right, we get to the next one here. We are at, where are we at? We are at 17. Pick number 17 with the Chargers. So when you look at the Chargers, couple different areas you could go. You can look on the defensive side of the ball and say, okay, defensive line's an area they can address, get some more help in there. I know the defensive numbers are what they are, but I also know that right tackle needs to be solved. We saw that in the game against the Raiders. That was a rough one. So I think they go offensive tackle here for the second year in a row. Home run last year with Rashawn Slater. They go to Central Michigan and get Bernard Raimann here with the 17th pick. Well, I'm a little bit higher on than a lot of folks out there. He's got tremendous strength. I'm talking about core strength and hand strength. Why does that matter? He does not get tugged and pulled. You see a lot of pass rush where they're able to get into your hands, tug and pull you, and then be able to win. He doesn't move, Buck. When he gets his hands on you, you cannot tug him. You can't pull him. He's an outstanding player. I think after the Senior Bowl, you're going to see him kind of take off and rise up through the process.
A rock solid prospect. There can be some people that talk about the school, Central Michigan, Cooper Five, like where does he fit?
But Joe Staley,
they have done a really good job producing players from that. He is rock solid. And when I think about the Chargers, once again, we go back to the quarterback. When you have a franchise quarterback, your number one priority is to do everything you can to protect him. Sometimes you protect him by getting better pass protectors. Other times it's surrounding him with playmakers. Either way, this is about Justin Herbert. You want to make sure that the guy does not have to endure some of the punishment that he took last year coming off that side.
No doubt. All right, we get to the Saints at 18. I've got them going to Ohio State for a wide receiver. I want to see that worked out for them once upon a time with Michael Thomas. I've got them going to Ohio State and getting Garrett Wilson. Again, it's a flavor thing between him and Chris Olave. Olave is going to fly. He's going to run the low 4.3s. Garrett Wilson probably in the mid 4.4s. Garrett Wilson just gives you a little bit more after the catch and can play above the rim a little bit more. So I think he's a great fit as they try and get some more firepower in that Saints offense.
Yeah, they're trying to upgrade him. They missed Michael Thomas, and so they had a season without their number one pass catcher, and you saw how it impacted their offensive production. And then you come back and get a route runner, a playmaker, and Garrett Wilson. Thumbs up.
All right. Eagles, their third pick here at number 19. Kelsey's older. Kelsey's a free agent. So you can easily look at this and say, okay, I can swap out Kelsey. I can put in Tyler Linderbaum, who's the top center in this draft, who's really would be a tremendous value at this point in time. However, they draft Landon Dickerson last year. Landon Dickerson played center at Alabama. Landon Dickerson is a big, massive human being who played guard this year. To me, it makes more sense. You slide him over to center. He's done it. He's huge. He's good at it. And then you go draft Kenyon Green right here out of Texas A&M, who's a 320-pound guard. He is a phenomenal player to me. I think this is a good value pick for where you get him right here. He can roll his hips. He's physical. And now all of a sudden you start looking at that line again, and you've got Mailata and Lane Johnson, and now you've got Dickerson, and now you add another young player here in Kenyon Green. You're cooking with gas on this offensive line.
Yeah, it's about the offensive line. When the Eagles have been at their best, they've been able to control the line of scrimmage. Kenyon Green, Texas A&M, we know what Jimbo Fisher has been putting together down there. Talented player, guy's a people mover. You put him in guard, you have Landon Dickerson, you have flexibility. That's the one thing about Howard Roseman. You get three picks right in the middle of the draft. You can do whatever you want to do.
No doubt. All right, let's stay in the state here, and let's go over to Pittsburgh, the Steelers with the 20th pick. I've got them taking Charles Cross, another offensive tackle out of Mississippi State. I know some people have him way up there. To me, this is kind of more in the range of where I have him graded. He is – one thing about him, man, when you look at your notes – you never see OTG on the ground. He is never on the ground. He's got really good balance. He's got good feet. he's not real dynamic, explosive, or powerful when you watch him in the run game. But man, he's a starting tackle, and the Steelers upgrading that offensive line, I think, is a need. I think he could play on either side. I think he's a really solid player here. Another offensive lineman goes with the 20th pick to the Steelers. All right, we'll take a little break, and we'll come back, and we'll finish up this first round. All right, Buck, let's roll through these here. 21, the Patriots, Jordan Davis, mammoth defensive tackle from Georgia. Some teams aren't going to love him just because they don't see the pass rush upside. The Patriots love bigs, and you put him now and Christian Barmore, man, you're going to dominate against the run with that group, and you're going to give yourself opportunities to rush a quarterback.
Yeah, you absolutely. It's about being able to create pressure. They need more pressure. They like to use four-man rushes and a bunch of simulated pressures. Jordan Davis can certainly fit in that mix.
Yep, he'd be able to push the pocket, no doubt. We get to the Raiders. Look, the Raiders need to add some more weapons on the outside. I mentioned Chris Olave a little bit earlier. He's going to run the 4-3s. He gives them the speed element that they lost with the awful situation with Henry Ruggs. You go out and get Olave, you plug and play. He's going to be a home run hitter. He's going to be an outstanding player at the next level.
Yeah, the speed factor is always important for the Raiders. They need another stretch to field guy. They need a young one, a dynamic playmaker.
All right, we get to the Cardinals. They go edge rusher David Ojabo out of Michigan. Wouldn't shock me if Ojabo went in the top 10. It wouldn't shock me if he went in the bottom of the first round. Grades around the league are all over the map on him. He's incredibly raw. He's got pass rush. He struggles against the run. But man, you know, some people say, oh, the production came because all the attention went to Aiden Hutchinson. I don't all necessarily buy that. I think this guy's got tools. He's got ability. He's raw. He's not there yet. You know, the comparisons to Odafe Oweh coming out last year are going to be out there. I thought Oweh was much stronger. He was a good run defender. You know, the knock on him was he didn't have the pass rush production. This kid's not as strong at the point of attack, but I think he's got a really good feel as a rusher. So I've got him sliding in here at 23 to the Cardinals.
Interesting. I like Ojabo. Having watched him up close and personal in the Big Ten championship game, I like the speed. I like the burst, the way he comes off. When you have an opportunity to take a young guy where he can watch Chandler Jones work every day, gives him a chance to really accelerate his development.
All right, we get to the Cowboys here at 24. This was a tough one to me. Mm-hmm. Linderbaum is staring at you, and that could be where they go. He's an outstanding player. But N'Kobe Dean is still on the board. And to me, N'Kobe Dean's one of the top players in this draft class, top 15 type talent. But as an off-the-ball linebacker who's a little bit undersized and who's somebody who I think he's going to run well, but I don't think he's going to run the 4.4s or the low 4.5s. You're a little bit undersized. You don't really hit all those marks. I think he's going to be a steal at this point in the draft. And I've got the Dallas Cowboys parking him. Think about him and Micah Parsons. You can free up Micah Parsons because N'Kobe Dean can be the signal caller. He can take care of all of the assignments and then just free up Micah Parsons to go. I think that leadership intelligence in N'Kobe Dean would be perfect fit for the Cowboys.
Yeah, it's not only those two guys, but think about Jabril Cox and what else they can do. And you think about this game where you have to be able to match up, you need more speed on the field. It's something that would have to be in consideration. Offensive line is going to be a huge conversation starter in Dallas. But if you're going to really fortify the defense, you need more speed, especially with Leighton Van Esch. I think he's a free agent at this point.
Yeah, and also can free up with Parsons, let him spend a little more time off the edge as well, which wouldn't be a bad idea. All right, here we go. Bengals, man, this is a home run. Tyler Linderbaum makes it all the way to 25. I think people can look at that and say, well, that's crazy. No, I mean, you look at the top centers. You look at Ryan Kelly was the 18th pick. Garrett Bradbury was the 18th pick. Garrett Bradbury struggled a little bit, too. He's a little bit undersized, and I think some of that is going to cause a little bit of concern with Linderbaum. I'm not worried about him. I think he's going to be rock solid. But centers don't traditionally go up there in the top 10 and the top 15. It just doesn't – it rarely happens. Nick Mangold is about the last one I can remember.
Yeah, centers are different than guards. Linderbaum is a technician. He's rock solid at the point of attack. That is a sweet spot. We talk about in the 20s, that's typically where you would get your high-end interior blockers. So, yeah, this is a nice spot for him.
All right, Dolphins – Daniel Falele, the ginormous tackle out of Minnesota. They've got to upgrade the offensive line. Again, Falele probably is a second round grade for most teams, but I think the tackles, there's just so much need. I think you're going to see him potentially come off the board here late one.
Yeah, he could be in the mix. We talk about this part of the first round. You just don't know. There's so many guys who have that borderline first, second round grade that you may see some names come off the board that you didn't expect. This guy's huge, man.
He's enormous. He's got pretty good feet, too.
Yeah, the Dolphins have to upgrade the people in front of him, even though they've thrown pick after pick after pick at offensive linemen. They got to add more because they have to be solid in front of Tua.
I just figured the Chiefs traded a first-round pick for Orlando Brown. I think this is a very similar player, and that was a late first-round pick, and here you go with Flele going late to the Dolphins. The Bills, I've got them taking the other Washington corner, Kyler Gordon. Who knew Washington had all these DBs? The year didn't go well for them, but, man, you study the tape. He's another one who's got great size. I think he's going to test even a little bit better than McDuffie. He can really play the ball when he got opportunities. He's got production. He's an intriguing player here. I got the Bills going with a corner here at 27.
Kind of fits their profile. This is a team that has quietly done it by really having a deep and talented defense without stars. Up front, they are able to get after it, but in the secondary, they just have really good players that are technicians. And Kyler Gordon is another one in the line of technicians that have come out of UW. Yeah, it works.
All right, let's get to the next one here. We have got the Tennessee Titans up at 28. I've got them taking linebacker Quay Walker. Quay Walker, to me, the size, the speed, he's almost 6'4 as an off-the-ball linebacker. He's 6'3 and a half. He's 245 pounds, and he can fly. So when you look at the contract situation, I just pulled it up here on Rashawn Evans. You know, this is it. So he's going to be a free agent. So to me, this is Quay Walker plugs right in and off you go.
You know, here's the thing. Like I love how the Titans play and I love the physicality and the toughness and how Mike Vrabel has a knack for making sure that the guys that he picks fits. Quay Walker's length and size, athleticism, bully ball mentality. It all kind of fits the profile of the Tennessee Titans. Certainly, he'll be in consideration if he's available right here at this spot.
All right, now we get to the Lions. Their second pick in the first round, they ended up with Aiden Hutchinson with the number 2 overall pick. They come back here at 29. And I said, look, let's take a shot on a quarterback. Let's go with Malik Willis, who's got all the raw ability. I thought his decision-making and accuracy took a little bit of a hit coming down the stretch. Finished it up with a great bowl game, though. But somebody who's, again, there's a lot to work with here. You don't have to play him right away. You've got Jared Goff. You can ease him in. But you've got somebody that's going to be really fun to develop with potentially as much upside as we have at the position in this draft.
Yeah, this is about upside. And when you have Jared Goff in place, and you may have Jared Goff in place for the next year or two, depending on how you determine to deal with the contract, Malik Willis is a talented playmaker. He has big-time tools. However, he's still raw as a passer. Situation like this where you have an established starter would be the right one for him. And I think for the Lions, it might be the right one for them because by the time he's ready to play, maybe the rest of the team will be built up and really can elevate his game as he also elevates theirs with his legs.
Plus, bottom of the first round, you get the extra year. So you got some more time to work with there as opposed to waiting till the second round. All right, we got the Chiefs. Jameson Williams tore his ACL. I think he's going to drop a little bit because of it, even though the recovery for this injury is pretty standard now. Mm-hmm. It's just the way it is. You've got a pretty good receiving draft, and those guys are all cleaner just health-wise. So I think he drops a little bit. And, of course, as it would happen, he lands in the Chiefs' lap. And they get the fastest wide receiver in the draft. They can add another member to their 4x1 team they have on the outside.
Yeah, it's funny that you have him going with the Chiefs because in my notes I wrote down, wow, speed. Like his speed is, you feel it. I mean, you feel it. Like whether you're looking at his Ohio State work or the work that he had at Alabama, not only as a receiver, but in the return game, the fact that he also
was a gunner.
That is exactly like, there's something to that. So even though the knee certainly will impact his draft stock, man, I can't see him falling out the first round. He is too good. He's too talented.
No, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, he could go anywhere. It wouldn't shock me if he went in the top 10. He's got that type of ability. Just, you know how it is. Teams look at that card, and it's got that little red dot on there for the injury, and you look at the other ones that don't, and sometimes that can inform your decision. Okay, a couple picks left here. The Tampa Bay Bucks. I've got him going Jahan Dotson out of Penn State. So yeah, they like shopping at Penn State, Buck. So I have him going back there to get a little more help here for these wide receivers they've got.
Last time they did it, it worked. Chris Godwin was a big time player for them. Jahan Dotson is interesting because he's one of the more cleaner and most complete wide receivers in his draft. He can kind of check off the boxes in every area with his hands, his route running ability. playmaking ability downfield, really good player. And you think about Tom Brady and what they want to evolve to, they are going to need to add more players like a Dotson that kind of have a complete toolbox as Tom gets older, because then you have to get into the dink and dunk game. Jahan Dotson can excel in that.
All right, last pick here in the first round. It is the Packers, and I have the Packers going with Devontae Wyatt, a defensive tackle from Georgia. Again, another Georgia defender. I think I have their defense here in the first round. But he is 312, 315 pounds. He's got big-time juice and burst. It would not shock me if he ended up actually going ahead of his teammate Jordan Davis, just because he can give you some more in terms of upside with a pass rush. I think this kid's going to test like a freak. He's going to climb up through the process. So I've got him at 32. I wanted to get him in the first round. I wouldn't be surprised if this is the floor for him if he moved up as we go through the process.
Yeah, hard motor player, big physical player, controls the line of scrimmage, does a really good job. When we think about the way the Packers have operated their drafts, it's about the trenches. It's about solid marquee players. This would give them another marquee player on a defense that is playing maybe better than anyone anticipated in year one of the Joe Barry era.
So there you have it. There it is, picks 1 through 32. Now, again, these are not my 32 highest rated players. These are the 32 players I have going in the first round of a mock draft. So I got my top 50 coming out next week. Buck, you've got your top position groups here, your rankings, your top fives. When are we going to see those bad boys?
So I got a mock draft coming out on Tuesday. I think top fives will probably come within the week after that. So I'm
okay.
Diligently working on that, trying to get that lined up, because, man, we get to this all-star season and all that other stuff. You better have those top fives up there so people can see where you're at.
Yep, and mock draft as well. Oh, man, I don't have to. That's good. This thing doesn't have a long shelf life. I can only take my abuse for a couple of days, and then you go right to the front of the firing squad here.
Oh, my
goodness. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I love it. Lots of fun with that.
All right, well, there you have it. Man, let us know. Leave us some comments here about what you like, what you don't like. I'm sure there might be a few that disagree with some of these picks. So let us know what you think on those, and I'll be curious to get your feedback. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Appreciate you guys hanging with us, and we'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.